up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad to be with us as we continue along on a Friday morning. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up later on this hour. But in just a couple of minutes, Bob Pockrass is going to join us as we talk Coca-Cola 600. Big day for motorsports coming up this weekend. Yesterday, we did a little preview of the Indianapolis 500, and this is sort of the back end of a doubleheader of racing with the Coca-Cola 600. This is the one that will start in the daytime and then run through the night. 600 miles, it's like 400 laps around Charlotte Motor Speedway. We'll talk about that coming up. It's one of the staples of the Memorial Day weekend. Another is the NBA playoffs, and that was continuing last night. The Denver Nuggets hit 23 pointers last night en route to a 120-115 win over Portland. They now lead that series 2-1. I was talking about a little bit this in the last hour, right? With first round series, you don't get very many on the edge of your seat, game seven, back and forth, sort of classic matchups. The opening series when you have this is to just sort of let the good teams roll through some bad teams, get rid of some bad teams. Maybe you have an upset or two, but in a seven-game series, that's really, really hard. There's got to be some sort of injury or some sort of unforeseen circumstance that sort of allows an eight to beat a one over a seven-game series. But nevertheless, if that happens, it happens. But for the most part, it's just to sort of allow teams to get a little postseason love, but then quickly get out of the way so the rest of the good teams can get in there. The Denver-Portland series, I think, though, is one, like I think the Knicks and Atlanta Hawks, because that's a 4-5. I think Denver, this is 3-6, is a good matchup. It's a really good matchup. These teams really play well against each other. Last night was a perfect example of that. Denver needed some push towards the end, some good three-point shots towards the end to sort of pull away from Portland. But as long as the Trailblazers have got Dame time going, they're a threat to win in Denver, win in Portland. They could even up this series coming up on Saturday. So there's a lot to like in this. I think that Milwaukee-Miami is just a boring series. The Bucks are way too good. Miami beat them last year in the bubble, but they're not beating them this time. And same thing with Philadelphia and Washington. I think, though, the Denver-Portland series, keep an eye on that if you're looking for a first-round series that's fun and exciting. Bob Pockrass is going to join us next. NASCAR's one of NASCAR's gem races, the Coca-Cola 600, at Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend. What can you expect, and what does he make of the season so far with 11 different drivers taking the checkered flag this season? It's all coming up. Sports Map Radio, Tony D, Ron Culver. Thanks for joining us.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, it's the back end of a motor racing doubleheader on Sunday, the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte. One of the premier events in motorsports. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. That and the state of the NASCAR Cup Series as we stand right now. Bob Pockrass joins us from Fox Sports. How are you, Bob?
Doing great. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. As I was mentioning, it's the back end of a motorsports doubleheader with the Indy 500. This is a very popular event. People like the length of it. It's kind of cool when it goes from day to night. Is it still the same level of endurance as it was years ago to go 600 miles in these cars?
It is for the drivers. As they've improved the build of the cars, it isn't necessarily as much a test of machine and who's going to last the full 600 miles as far as the car. But for the driver, it wears a lot. You know, I was talking to a driver, William Byron, earlier, and he said the one thing about this race is that he kind of needs to decide what to eat during the race. Like, can he get some energy chews? What can he do? Because it's a 4.5-hour race, and as you said, it kind of goes from day to night. Fortunately for the drivers, it's going to be cool. It's going to be in the 70s at the start and in the 60s by the finish.
How does a race car change, and how does a track change when you see the sun up and provides some heat from the sky to when it cools down at night? What does the driver have to do when the track changes temperature like that?
Well, the track gains grip as it gets deeper into the night. You know, when it's hot and slick, they need the car to handle more. And then when it gets into the night, they have the grip on the tires to the track, and it's all about speed. And in the engines, they tend to work a little bit better in the cooler temperatures as well.
How much does strategy goes into this when with drivers? If it's a long race, like you said, 4.5 hours, it's 400 laps. But when you talk about keeping the car, maybe I'll stay 15th for a while until I make a move. How much of that is played into a long race like that?
I think where strategy comes in is to know that the track is going to change. And so don't make any crazy changes to your car if you think it's pretty good early and you think it'll be better later. You know, if you're struggling, let's say you are 15th, it's better to ride around in 15th and let the track necessarily come to you than to maybe make a bunch of changes for why you're running 15th and then realize that you've kind of tuned yourself out for the nighttime and all of a sudden you're running 25th.
So far this season, 11 different drivers have won. That sounds like it would be a recipe for success. Has it been a recipe for success in sort of entrance and sort of the broad nature of what this season has meant without sort of a dominating presence? I mean, I know Martin Truex Jr. has 3 wins, but it's not like he has 7.
Yeah, it's great to see so many different drivers win. You know, obviously, if you're fans, the fans of each of those drivers have had something to cheer. You've had some surprise winners in Michael McDowell in the Daytona 500. Christopher Bell, not necessarily a surprise that he won, but that he won on the Daytona road course. And I think even a bigger surprise is that you've got a couple of fan favorites, drivers who have won, won a lot of races last year in Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin, who haven't won yet. So it's not just it's not just some surprises, but some drivers that you've expected to see have a win this year who still have a goose egg in the win column.
Remind us now, all of these drivers have a place in the playoff unless there's more than 16 slots and then they go to points?
Yeah, so there's 16, pretty much, there's 16 slots in the playoffs, but one of those slots is reserved for the regular season champion. And now that's Denny Hamlin, and he has about a 100-point lead. So as long as he stays in the lead in the regular season standing, he's in. And then it's the next 15 drivers based on wins, and then ties are broken by points. So it's key for those drivers with one win to get a second win, because then that definitely guarantees them in, because no matter where they are in points, as long as they're in the top 30, their two wins would be considered the tiebreaker over anybody with one win, no matter how many points they have.
So this season, there's some new races on the racetrack. Nashville is coming up. That's where I live, and I know people here are really excited for that. But last week, they went at Circuit of Americas, a road course, and even though it was raining, has NASCAR broadened its look as to where they can find new tracks and new places to go? Where did that sort of generate from?
I think it generated from going to the same places over and over and over and feeling that they needed to go to new markets and plus their new car that's going to debut next year is more designed to race on road courses. They know that some of their best racing is on road courses, so they want to add, you know, Circuit of the Americas, Road America. They wanted to try the dirt race and decided to throw a bunch of dirt on Bristol.
That's right, yeah.
They're trying to generate some excitement, some intrigue, and so when you go to a racetrack or at least for not every week that you're like, these are the two or three drivers who've been good here every year. Those are the ones who are going to win. They wanted to add to the variety, and you know, next week they're going to do an iRacing event on a street course in Chicago, a virtual street course, but they're using that. They've used the iRacing platform in hopes of trying to design a street course that could work on the actual streets of Chicago. And whether that happens next year or 2023 or 2024 remains to be seen, but that's their goal.
Last week, there was a lot of criticism with the rain and the danger that rain presented. I mean, maybe guys were just talking right away and the emotions got the best of them. But was it justified in a way how that race was run?
Absolutely. I mean, even NASCAR said that they probably stopped the race a little too late as drivers had some hard crashes because they couldn't see. And you know, this was the first time Cup cars had raced in a downpour. And Circuit of the Americas has some long straightaways, and the rooster tails and the spray from the cars just made it difficult for the drivers to see. And the fact is that in practice, the drivers were complaining about not being able to see, And it didn't seem that, you know, it didn't seem that NASCAR was all that proactive in trying to create any sort of system to say, hey, if you can't see, let us know. And thankfully, nobody was hurt in either of those two very, very rough crashes.
Going back to the 11 different drivers that have won, I know people remember sort of dominating days of Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson and whatnot, and some drivers that have really racked up some victories. But has there been something in NASCAR that has allowed a lot more drivers to be competitive for wins, a lot more teams to have cars that are competitive to win for wins?
That's a great question. I think if you look at all the drivers who won, with the exception of really McDowell, you would have expected all those drivers to have won at some point this year. Like, nothing is a total surprise beyond maybe Stuart Haas Racing, led by Kevin Harvick, who haven't run as well this year. I think the one thing that has happened is that with the new car coming in 2022, NASCAR has had a freeze on parts development. So it's kind of what you've got is what you've got, but they've also have changed the way they've inspected the cars, and that has taken away maybe some of the advantages that some of the teams had last year. They're pretty much interpreting one of their rules a little bit differently when it comes to how the car, the shape of the body of the car around the wheel. And some teams had really been able to find some speed in that, and they don't have that this year.
Bob Pockrass joins us, Fox Sports, on the Coca-Cola 600 coming up this weekend. Is this a race normally won by savvy veterans who have figured this race out, or can a winner come from nowhere for this a race like this?
We've seen, you know, what Casey Mears, I think, won this race, and you would say maybe he came out of nowhere, but mostly it is the veterans, it is the drivers who know what they want, and as we talked about earlier, it's the drivers who aren't going to panic if they're not running well early in the race, because they know the track will change throughout the night.
Really appreciate it. Bob, good information. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the weekend. I appreciate it, your time.
Thank you.
You got it. Bob Prockers for Fox Sports and the Coca-Cola 600. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new HomeQuote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. I went to the Coca-Cola 600 2009. It was fun. I mean, we ended up getting a rain delay, and we had to watch it last year. But there was a lot of pageantry that went on in the race. Memorial Day weekend, a lot of tributes to veterans and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun.
I got to admit, it is a bucket list of mine to go to a NASCAR race.
Yeah, they're great. If you've never been to one, my parents went to one. You know, I grew up in New Hampshire, and we had a track that had a Winston Cup, back then Winston Cup that came. That's how I got my start and whatnot. But my parents didn't go until I moved to Vegas, and then they came out to Vegas, and they went to the inaugural Las Vegas 400. And they you know, it was exciting. They were it's thrilling. It's kind of neat. I always recommend people go if you can get a ticket, go. Even if you don't know anything about the cars or anything about the drivers, you don't know anything about the sport, just go to sense it. It's one of those sports that if you can get down onto the concourse when they come by near the fence, it's pretty awesome. They're really fast. And it's the first time I went, I was blown away. First time I went, it was crazy because no one told me. When my first NASCAR race was in 1994, and my boss didn't tell me that for a noon start in New Hampshire that I needed to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to get there on time. It was like one country road that led into the racetrack, and they were going to put 80,000 people in that place. So I got up at like 6:30, got dressed, kind of went out there. By the time I was 10 miles from the track, and I knew I was in trouble. It was like, oh no. I went off the exit. I was like, oh no, I'm going to be here forever. It took forever to get in, and I finally got in and got to my spot and watched the race. But going to a race is a pain because it's usually these tracks. They're not like arenas, right? Like football stadiums where they got easy access to the interstate and whatnot. They're usually like in the middle of nowhere. You got to drive down like one state road to get there. And the cops try to keep the traffic moving, but it takes forever. But yeah, if you can get to one, go to one. They're pretty fun. And even if you don't know the rules, just go to enjoy. Like, my mother didn't know anything about the race. She chose Lake Speed because he was right racing in the spam car. I thought that was awesome.
Why not
root for the guy that's in the spam car?
You know, take it a step further. He must be Hawaiian.
That's true. I always joked, did he need that special key to get out of the car where he had to kind of roll it across to get the roof out? Instead of just going out the window.
Peel it back all the time.
You had to peel it back so you could get out of the car. Yeah, you could pick a driver. Like, if you like M&M's, go with Kyle Busch. Who cares?
Right.
Pick a sponsor and root for the sponsor. It's always good. All right, it is Wake Up Call. We got Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. That's coming up in 15 minutes. You don't want to miss that as we continue as on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joining us, it is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you. Curbside, you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so I had this habit when I was in Colorado that every now and then I would write down all the teams for a particular sport, and then I would write all the managers' names, or I might write all the head coaches' names, or just something so I would remind. I was very focused on Colorado sports. That's what my show is about. I was talking Nuggets and Broncos and Rockies and Colorado Buffaloes. So I wanted to keep in touch with what was going on. So I was like trying to remind myself, oh, they made some coaching changes. These are the coaches. And I kind of did this exercise, and it was mostly try to fill in the blanks. And on the blanks that I was really blank, I was like, I can't remember who got hired at Arizona. Then I would go online and look it up and I would fill it in. It was hopefully I would retain that memory. And every now and then I still do that. Like, I might write down all the Big Ten college basketball coaches just to sort of remind myself who's running the shows at those particular schools if I want to get into Big Ten basketball or whatnot. Even in the NFL with the turnovers at coaches, you know, here's a list, write all the coaches' names down just to remind myself who is now in charge. Yesterday, I did the exact same thing, but I did NFL quarterbacks because at one point, I sort of forgot that there was really an off season of shuffling around quarterbacks in this league. Now, some I was able to put a couple of options, right? Like in New Orleans, Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill calling plays there. You know, teams like that where there might be Cam Newton or Mac Jones or Brian, you know, is Brian Hoyer still in the mix or is he out? Jared Stidham. I never know.
Brian.
San Francisco, it looks like it's Jimmy Garoppolo, but does Trey Lance take, I mean, who knows, right? So I did that yesterday, and it was one of those reminders. And I tell you right now, if you're a sports fan and sometimes you forget some, you know, it's a good exercise to do. It's kind of fun to see if you can remember who's a head coach or who's a quarterback. And I was going through it, and some of them, you know, you fly by, you know, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Ben Roethlisberger. But then there were others where I was like pausing, and I was like, wait, who? Oh, yeah, Carson Wentz is over there in Indianapolis now, right, working with Frank Reich. And it sort of brings up those, you know, that same kind of thoughts of this is different. Matt Stafford is in Los Angeles. Jared Goff is under center in Detroit. There are rookies that may or may not be making their debut. We know Trevor Lawrence should start from day one. We know that Bryce Wilson is likely to do the same thing. We don't know Trey Lance is going to do that in San Francisco. We don't know if Mac Jones is going to do that in New England. So those, you know, those conversations were coming up, but it was kind of fun to do. But it just reminded me that as we get closer to training camp starting, and it'll be here before you know it. I mean, we're already almost into June, and training camp is going to start at the end of July. And by the way, there are three teams that get to start early: Tampa Bay, Dallas, and Pittsburgh. Dallas gets the double start early because they play on both the opening weekend of the opening game on that Thursday night, and they also open the preseason against the Steelers in the Hall of Fame game. So they absolutely get to start early. Steelers and Buccaneers, because of those circumstances, get to start early. Everyone else is starting on the same date. It's not always been the case. It's always been teams would have different dates for rookies and veterans to report and camp starting. So you'd have that. But it is kind of, again, it's just a sort of reminder once again about how different you know, quarterbacks are taking over certain positions in this offseason. I'm really curious about Carson Wentz. Russell Baxter is going to join us coming up in, next hour?
Next hour.
Next hour, we're going to talk to Russell Baxter. And that's one of my questions I'm going to ask him. Because when Carson Wentz went to Indianapolis, there was like five reasons to be excited about this for Carson Wentz, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was like a perfect storm of really fantastic stuff that was waiting for him with the Colts. But he still has to be good. All of those things don't matter if he's not good. He still has to be good, but good offensive line, good running game, Frank Reich, right? Better atmosphere than in Philadelphia. All these
change
good
of scenery,
things.
Or, you know, I don't want to slight them, but I'm gonna say better fan base.
Yeah,
because they're not gonna eat him alive.
It is the ultimate chance to start over. It's getting a second chance at your NFL career with better tools. Right? Like, it was a mess in Philadelphia. It was so many things in Philadelphia that were working against him that even if he played well, they would lose. Here, he's got things, so many things working for him. And we were saying this at the time, Phillip Rivers didn't have a Pro Bowl year and that team made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't have to be brilliant for that team to make the playoffs again. He doesn't have to be exponentially better than what Phillip Rivers produced on the field.
He doesn't have to be recreate, what was it, 2017?
Yeah,
2018,
right?
MVP season?
Yeah, right, the MVP season.
Where he was going to win but broke his leg?
Yeah, he doesn't have to do that.
No.
Right? He has to be good, but he doesn't have to be MVP. He doesn't have to be on an Aaron Rodgers-like level for the Colts to be successful. The Colts were successful last year with a quarterback that was pretty good. And then, you know, some days not so good, but he was pretty good. And they were good enough because they had so many things working right for that football team. A good defense, that's always the key, because it allows you as a quarterback to make a few mistakes and have it not kill you. Whereas if you have a bad defense and you turn over the ball and that leads to a touchdown, and then you throw another, you have another interception and it leads to a touchdown. Now you're finding yourself down two scores. Now you got to change some things. Now you got to do some things different. Now you got a little bit of a sense of urgency. But when you have a defense that is like, no, don't worry, we got it. You turn them all over, we'll hold them to a field goal, or we'll get the ball back and I'll force him to punt. Man, it allows you that little bit of freedom to sort of go, look, turnovers aren't going to kill me like they used to kill me. There's so many things working for him in Indianapolis. But then you look at, you know, you look at Trevor Lawrence at Jacksonville, right? What is a realistic expectation for Trevor Lawrence in his rookie year? It can't be worldly. We don't expect that of anybody.
No, in fact, what's the one joke that we keep making? We're expecting him to lose his first game, regular season game ever.
And multiple games, because that's what happens in this league. Look, I think the thing about the league, about the NFL is, and I think one of the beauties of it, is that it's not easy to figure out. There's no formula that says this quarterback, if he does X, Y, and Z, will be successful. We've had quarterbacks who do X, Y, and Z and retire at 29 years old. We have quarterbacks who don't do any of those things and they win multiple Super Bowls. It's not a formula for success. Success can come in different areas. But the one thing that is pretty consistent is that rookie quarterbacks, first-round picks, guys that are supposed to change a bad franchise, do not do it overnight. You know, they just don't. You know, Trevor Lawrence was the number one pick overall because Jacksonville stinks. They stink. And he's supposed to change a team that's lousy, albeit a new head coach, but they're lousy. And it's going to take a little bit longer for him to match his growth and the talent that will come in to match his growth, right? That's just the way it is, right? Peyton Manning had to go through it. All these guys had to go through it when you first get into the league, right? A couple of them can sneak into the postseason, right? Some of them surprise you enough, right? They win more games than you think they should. But for the most part, the betting favorite is struggle, learn this, get it right down the road and quickly, but not in the first year because the team is supposed to be pretty bad. Oh, by the way, one more thing, and I don't mean to grab onto the Tebow train again, but I saw the report that Tebow caught all the passes I was like, are we doing this? Is this what we're going to do?
I'm telling you, he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year.
We're doing this, aren't we?
Pro Bowl tight end, Tim Tebow.
Break down every step he makes in these workouts.
Hey, you know, the other thing I saw was how thick the guy is looking.
Oh, I know.
He beefed up a little bit.
He did. He is. But man, if that's your gig, if your gig is to follow Tim Tebow around to analyze his blocking because that's what the people want, I'll take a poll because I don't know if that many people still want that. All right, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up next as we continue on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb Friday edition. Friday before a three-day weekend edition. What more can we add to this? Well, I don't know, but let's get the good of the day.
All right, well, we got two. Because it's Friday, three-day weekend, why not, right?
Right.
So the first one, the good, I mean, it's a quick little good, it's a tiny little good, but it feeds the Star Wars nerdum in us all.
Oh, here we go.
Not once, but 2 days in a row, and we are going to revisit the Cubs-Pirates fiasco, right? Because that fiasco kind of led to what I'm about to tell you, that 2 days in a row, yesterday and the day before, the, you know, the little score ticker box that sits on your TV screen?
Yes.
That shows, you know, the outcome of the game? Said, read C3P0.
Aww.
So.
That's right.
We had that 2 days in a row, C3PO.
That is sweet.
So, I mean, just, you know, just to feed a little nerd, Star Wars nerdum in us all when you see that.
We find them everywhere, don't we?
You see that and you're like, hey, look at that. It says C-3PO.
That's great.
But the real good of the day is our boy Phil.
Yeah, this was great.
He did not have a good round yesterday, but he does have still has his great sense of humor. Here's his response to a reporter who asked him about said round.
Phil, obviously, you had said you wanted to come here and kind of build off the momentum. I know this isn't quite the day you want to just talk about today and how difficult it was.
Yeah, I didn't play well. I shot three over, but I won the PGA, so.
That's great. That's exactly right.
Right?
What is he doing there? He made a commitment he couldn't get out of?
I was surprised that he was even playing.
He's 50 years old. He could have called the Colonial and said, because he's a former champion there. He could have called and said, listen, man, I can't do this. I know I promised I'd go, but I got to pull out. I got to go home. I got to chill. I can't go to this.
You don't know how hard I concentrated for four days in a row.
I mean, my brain is a puddle of goo. I can't go.
Well, I mean, you know, Phil's probably thinking, it's like, you know what, I'll go play 2 days and then
sign some autographs, take some pictures, enjoy. And you know what? There is an attraction to enjoying the reception, right? Like he's getting huge ovations. You know, this is his chance to sort of bask in a little Texas sunlight from winning the PGA. But, you know, this happens at the Masters. This happens because the Masters is played, and then right after that they go to Harbortown in South Carolina, and it's a beautiful course, and it's a real money grab because the course is pretty easy, and guys go there, and they make the cut, they make some money. But they always book it. They don't think they're going to win the Masters.
Right.
So they go, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to Augusta. I'm going to play the Masters. I'm going to boogie over to Harbortown for this fantastic, fun golf weekend at this beautiful, you know, coastal course that's easy to play. So I'll put that on my calendar when they're putting it together in, you know, December. But then the person that wins the Masters is like, oh man, I don't want to be here. Like I won the Masters, but they're normally there. They because they all book it. They all book the trip to Harbortown, and mostly you'll find the Masters champion in that field. And so this is a situation where he's a former champion at Colonial. He likes the course. I'm sure he gets treated great, like as a former champion. He looked at the schedule, said, look, there's the PGA. This is in Texas. It's not going to be 100 degrees. I can play there. I'll make a stop there as winning that tournament. He didn't think he was going to win the PGA.
No, not at all.
Right?
I mean,
so now he's like, oh, God, can I just relax? But I can't. I made the commitment, and I want to be the guy of my word. I did make a commitment. And look, the reason they don't like pulling out is because a lot of the marketing is geared around them, these guys, right? Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson. They're on the brochures. They're on the things you get, the mailers that you get to buy tickets. They're on all the ads. Come see the, you know, because those commitments count for something. And Phil could easily have called him and explained he was, but he probably is like, I don't like doing that.
And you know what? And honestly, the Colonial probably would have been like, yeah, we get it. We understand.
Of course they would. Of course they would. But he probably said, look, it's not the way I do business. I don't like, I'm not going to be that guy. It doesn't cost me anything to show up and play.
No.
I'll play. I'll sign some autographs and fulfill my sponsor obligations, and then I'll leave.
Yeah. I mean, I literally think he plays today and then he's out.
Yeah, I think completely.
You know, I don't think
he
cares.
Getting around this thing and go.
I don't think he cares today.
Yeah. Like, normally when Phil gets to a hole and goes, okay, the lie is a slanted Bermuda, and I think the wind is about 10 miles. He's like, what do we got? Just 7-iron, I guess. Just give me one.
Yeah.
Just give me a club.
Let me just try it.
Let's try it. Good for them. Great response.
I still got the trophy in the plane.
Yeah.
It's all good. Still got it in the jet.
Tell him to start it up on 117.
If it's not too late, I might be able to have dinner with Amy tonight.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, let's kind of speed this along.
Let's play quick.
Yeah.
What's the bad of the day?
It's not really a bad of the day.
Okay.
I didn't know where to put this, so I put it here. You know, there's a new contender, if you will, for Cartoon Nostradamus.
Ooh.
You know how we always highlight the Simpsons, how they're able to predict everything.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Well, there's a viral, it's a viral photo or cartoon ad. Not a cartoon ad. It's from the Betty comics or the Archie comics.
Okay.
And this was part of the Betty series in 1997. It accurately predicted remote learning.
Oh, did it really?
Not only that. Because it's like, I think it's a Betty cartoon, but it's flash forwarding into the future. And so it gives the year as well. And the year says 2021 AD.
Okay, so that's better than just, because one of the things that I always have a problem with people predicting, it's easy to predict future technology,
yeah.
And then one day it shows up, right?
The Simpsons predicting Donald Trump would be president, you know, that was fun,
yeah.
But you guys just threw it out there. This literally says 2021 AD, and it's talking, you know, and it's, I think it's an older Betty with her husband, which I don't think is Archie or Jughead. And maybe the daughter. I'm not 100% sure who all the characters are because it's just like one page out of it. And, you know, going on about, these kids today don't know how lucky they are that, you know, they don't have to commute to school. They don't have to deal with weather. You know, it takes, you know, da-da-da-da. And, you know.
Oh, my God. Little did they know we hated it.
And she and the kid is, you know, and a teenager, I think, finishing up high school or whatnot. And she's staring at a computer screen. And she's like, yeah, I'm about to log on. And then the screen says, you know, waiting for somebody coming in. It's really bizarre. I thought at first it was fake.
Well, my immediate assumption is whenever I see a year that is so accurately put on something, I go, that somebody did that in post.
But Snopes says it's 100% true.
All right.
So it's it's not really bad. I mean, it's really cool, but it was also kind of eerie at the same time.
I sort of killed one of my friend's posts because they had a picture of the Jetsons and like different scenes of the Jetsons that showed things we kind of have now. And they were like, wow, this was so accurate. I'm like, they're just saying one day there would be a robot made. Don't you believe that one day there will be a robot made? It's like, it's not predicting the future. It's anticipating technology that's coming eventually. Like you're right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, having a push a button and a meal is made, right? That's probably coming sooner than you think. One day that's probably coming. But if you put a date on it and you land on the date, that's pretty awesome. That's great. That's fantastic. That's a little spooky, but still.
Yeah, it's very spooky. That's
start
why
looking
I mean,
in Betty comics to see when
it's
when
not
we all
really,
die
that's
from
what
the
I said,
asteroid.
It's not really bad. It's,
no,
but it's just, you know, it is, it's weird.
A little freaky.
Yeah.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, we are going to go back and visit the Cubs Pirates play yesterday because
oh,
I can't
yes.
think of anything dumber at all. But this time, I had the Pirates radio play call.
Oh, I love it. Let's hear this.
Here's the 0-2 home and a swing and a ground ball on to third base. He took a neck-high pitch and hit it on the ground to third. Now Baez running back toward home plate.
Tag him.
Tag him quickly. And what did Craig do there? They get a run out of that, and now they got to get the out at first. And they throw it into right field. That's going to get a run for the Cubs. Oh, my, what a loony play. And he's in at second base. Just tag him out. What was that? The Cubs are going to get a run, and Baez is safe at second base on a routine ground out to third. Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
Just the exasperation, like, ugh.
Yeah. They watch baseball every single day, and they
every
have
day.
No idea what they just saw.
Yep.
And then just love, like, just tag them.
I love that play because in the very beginning of that, you could hear the sort of laziness. I don't mean laziness like routine. No work. Just the sort of smoothness of like, and a ground ball to third, and throws it all is off the bag, and just sort of the casual way. Yeah, just flowing along.
You know how that sentence finished. Ball. That sentence finished with, you know, ground ball to third, and he's out of first, end of the inning. We have up, getting ready to read whatever ad you got to push.
Right. Pirates, Cubs leave a runner, and after two, it's right, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the way it's sort of increases in intensity as he slowly realizes the Pirates are puking all over themselves in this inning, it's hysterical.
Definitely, I've seen a couple of videos where they put that play to Benny Hill music.
Oh, absolutely. Of course they do. Without question.
It's one of the most bizarre things. It hurts the brain to actually try to figure out what's going on.
The crazy thing about it is, where did he think Javier Baez was going to go?
Yeah.
Like you could run him down all the way to home plate. It was not necessary to hold up. It was not necessary to pause to see where he would go next. You could just run at him at full speed, and he had no place to go. He wasn't going to be safe at home.
Yeah. I mean, was he thinking that? It was like running him down between first and second. That's where I'm struggling. Like he had a total mental lapse of what was going
completely.
On.
Completely. Wilson Contreras coming around to score helps that play because it panics Will Craig.
Yes.
It panics him. He thinks, oh my God, I got to get the runner that's going to score rather than let me tag this guy out and we're out of the inning and that doesn't count.
Yeah. I mean, it was that simple.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
I mean, the only thing I we're missing here, I just wish we could have seen what the manager said afterwards to him.
Right after the game.
Well,
right after the play.
Why didn't you just step on the bag?
And he's like, Coach, I don't know.
His explanation, because we keep hearing from all the Cubs, you know. And then the shot of the Cubs bench just laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know.
Scott Bakula sort of warped into him like in Quantum Leap.
And didn't know what was going on.
That's
the best theory so far.
Right? Was it Dr. Beckett? Yeah. Sam Beckett? Warped, just kind of like became professional baseball player Will Craig.
And it was Gidgey?
Yeah, exactly.
Who was Dean Stockwell's character?
Dean Stockwell's character, right.
Can't remember him sitting there going, Sam, oh, what? Ooh. Now, I don't know what's going on right now.
Don't be surprised in the next couple of days if Will Craig doesn't rectify something that went wrong so that Dr. Beckett could get out of that body and find his way to leap home.
Yeah.
That's it. But in that moment, he became professional baseball player Will Craig, who had no idea what to do with the baseball while he was running down Chicago Cubs Javier Baez.
You think afterwards he was talking to Dean Stockwell going, like, I've never played first base before. Anytime I played baseball, I was always in left field.
Sam, you're supposed to touch the bag. I don't know. That's the best one I can come up with.
I grew up playing basketball.
Right, exactly. All right, it's Wake Up Call. That is the good, the bad, and the dumb. And we're going an extra 2 hours today, filling in for Boss and the Gloss as we continue along at Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Michael on Twitter. Edmonton and Calgary are oil-rich cities. They don't have a Canadian Jerry Jones willing to break the bank. Toronto, Canada's Wall Street, doesn't have a Canadian Warren Buffett willing to do the same. He's talking about something we talked about last hour, which is, why doesn't somebody just go into these NHL teams in Canada, figure their way around the cap, and put together the best possible hockey team that is on the face of the earth to win that Stanley Cup back for that country?
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about. Michael makes a good point. These oil-rich cities in Canada, they don't have a guy that's like, screw it, I'm buying the Oilers, and we're gonna team somebody up with Connor McDavid, and we're gonna win these cups.
See, I learned something today, and I'm gonna be completely honest with you guys. I never really put two and two together that Edmonton had oil.
Good point.
I did it.
Yeah,
I know, because I don't think of Canada having oil. I think of Canada having ice. You know
why? Because they don't wear cowboy hats.
Exactly.
And eat beef?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
You know, they're not chewing straw. Maybe they are. You
it's
know
a little
mean?
Different.
They
when
do
you
have
hear...
the Canadian tuxedo. So
yeah, it's a little different, Ron, when they're flying over Canada and you're da na 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 na.
I mean, do they have that TV show?
They,
is it
do
called,
they?
Is it called Edmonton?
Is there a J.R. Ewing in Edmonton?
But
who shot once, me, eh?
Once you said, once I got to give Michael credit, once Michael put down that Edmonton and Calgary are oil-rich things, I'm like, that's probably why they're called the Oilers.
Maybe that's why they're called the Flames, too. Maybe an oil flame.
I don't know why I never put those two together.
There you go. By the way, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. Yeah, no doubt.
See?
Get that cup back, Canada.
Yes. That's the main thing.
We're getting bored with it down here. We've taken it everywhere it possibly could go.
There's no other place for it.
No other place for it. We pretty much handed it out to every city in America. You want the cup?
Yeah.
You want the cup? Just get a hockey team. Eventually, we'll get it to you.
I mean,
we'll
definitely
get it to you before we send it up there.
I guess we'll take it to the largest ball of twine.
Yeah.
You know,
if the Seattle Kraken win the cup before Canada does, they're going to just pull out.
No,
you know,
actually, yeah, Canada needs to give up all their teams.
They'll just say, that's it. We're done. If the Seattle Kraken win the Stanley Cup, I quit.
We take Montreal. We take Toronto.
Yep.
We take them all.
We're taking them all.
Vancouver.
Enjoy that. One of the greatest trophies in all of sports all around the globe. And it's sitting in America, and we don't know what to do with it. Taking it to Disneyland. Taking it on roller coasters, barbecues, you name it.